The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. The Vienna Non-Governmental Organizing Committee held a webinar recently to discuss the UN Office on Drugs and Crime's World Drug Report 2025. Two of the speakers represented NGOs, and we're going to hear their presentations later in the show. But first, resistance against the militarization of domestic policing and to the ongoing federal assault on communities and working people continues to grow. In Washington, D.C., people are organizing and fighting back. On September 6th, tens of thousands of people and scores of advocacy organizations gathered together in the district for the We Are All D.C. rally.
Let's hear from our fellow MC, Lydia Walder Rodriguez, the Chief of Organizing and Leadership for CASA.
Libera DC! Mi nombre es Lidia Walter Rodriguez y soy la directora de Organizar y Liderar con CASA. My name is Lydia Walter Rodriguez and I am the Chief of Organizing and Leadership with CASA. I'm a proud immigrant from Panama. And for all of my brothers and sisters from Panama who know very well the pain and the bruises and the scars that militarized occupation have left in our people. The bombs that dropped days before Christmas, killing thousands of Panamanians, and the illegal invasion of the U.S. to Panama in 1989. This is a scar that my family lives with. Esta es una cicatriz que mi familia vive. Y todas nuestras familias en Centro Suramérica, mientras todos los cuerpos de los desaparecidos no pueden ser contados. All of our families in Central and South America who are still mourning the deaths of the toll that can't even be counted. We are here today to say no more to militarized occupation. Estamos aquí para decir no más. Estamos aquí con miles de nuestras familias inmigrantes y comunidad trabajadora. We are here with thousands of our community who is working class, who is immigrant, who lives right here in D.C. and is marching today, knowing that just last week, their families were ripped away from them and deported. Shame! Shame! Esta lucha de D.C. Hemos escuchado amenazas para Baltimore, para Chicago, para todas nuestras comunidades negras y latinas. We have heard the threat of occupation here in D.C., expanding to Baltimore, expanding to Chicago. But we are going to rise up together and not be silenced, because our stories and our struggles is how we resist and fight forward. Nuestras historias y nuestros sufrimientos son la forma que resistimos y continuamos esta lucha. Hoy día se ve y se siente que el pueblo está presente. Y el llamado para todos ustedes es que continuemos la lucha en D.C. y continuemos a resistir. We can see that the people are united and rose up today in D.C. And my ask to all of you that this does not stop. We continue to do the grassroots work here in D.C. and throughout the country and continue to resist. I want to also call on our co-MC. Quiero también darle la palabra a nuestro co-MC, Sam Epps, del Metro AFL-CIO. Y también que Emilio Sánchez Méndez es un miembro de Unite Here. I want to call on Sam Epps, who is the president of the Metro Washington AFL-CIO and a proud member of Unite Here. Help me welcome him on stage.
Thank you, Lydia. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Sam Epps, and I am proud to represent more than 150 unions and over 150,000 workers in the D.C. region. Are there any union members in the house with us today? I am here on behalf of our labor movement because we know this administration's agenda of destruction, including those that are coming after workers and our jobs. This administration has fired thousands of people in our region. This administration is known and is doing union busting. And now this administration is arresting people, working people, who are simply on their way to work and on their way to job. Is this safety? Is this safety? Is this safety? We'll turn it back over to Lydia.
Billions of taxpayer dollars, your hard-working money, billones de dólares de impuestos, están siendo usados para militarizar este país, brutalizar nuestra gente, alzar a ICE. Billions of taxpayer dollars are being used to make this state and this country a police and ICE country. Will we allow it? Will we allow it? If you say no, lift your left fist in the air and chant with me. Enough is enough.
Enough is enough.
Enough is enough.
Enough is enough.
Our ancestors have taught us to fight back, resist, and organize. And that's exactly what we will continue doing.
From DC to Palestine, we must end occupation.
That's right.
DC is rising up against this administration, and we are taking the nation with us. Why? Because we are all DC.
We are all DC.
We're gonna hear about a lot of that and then on our time together. But to begin, we are reminded that we are here together on stolen land. We are here together on stolen land. Please join me in welcoming Gabrielle Tyler from the Piscataway Tribe.
United in D.C. Free D.C. Free D.C. No one is illegal on stolen land. Greetings, my relatives. My name is Gabrielle Tyak, and I'm here as a Piscataway woman.
Mi nombre es Gabrielle, y soy, estoy aquí como mujer indígena.
Greetings with love, profound strength, and thanks.
Les quiero dar la bienvenida con amor y también bastante resistencia.
Your march today did not begin in Malcolm X Park.
La marcha el día de hoy no comenzó en el parque de Malcolm X.
It did not begin at 11 a.m.
No comenzó a las 11 de la mañana.
It began 11,000 years ago.
Comenzó más de 11,000 años.
It began 400 years ago.
Comenzó más de 400 años.
In a place called Nacogdoches.
En un lugar que se llamaba Nacogdoches.
Anacostia.
Anacostia.
Now known as Washington, D.C.
Ahora que se llama el Distrito de Washington.
It was a place full of families like all of ours now.
Era un lugar lleno de familias como todas las familias ahora mismo.
A beautiful living river that we call the Potomac, the river of life.
Un río hermoso que llamamos el río de vida, el río del Potomac.
The forest full of breathing air and oxygen.
Teníamos tantos árboles, tanto oxígeno.
And this is the homeland of my people, the Piscataway people.
Y ese es el hogar de mi gente nativa.
We are still here.
Nosotros todavía estamos aquí.
And you are here now with us.
Y ustedes ahora están aquí con nosotros.
We've known through years of whether you have come here through enslavement or force.
Sabemos que muchas personas que llegaron aquí.
If you came from lands fleeing violence.
Si ustedes se fueron por la perjudición. O se fueron como personas que robaron y encarcelaron.
All of you came here with dreams.
Todos ustedes vinieron aquí con sueños.
And here today we have a dream of free DC.
Y hoy tenemos un sueño para liberar a DC.
You just heard Gabrielle Tyak, PhD, an associate professor of public history at George Mason University. Before her, you heard Samuel Epps, president of the Metropolitan Washington Council of the AFL-CIO, and Lydia Walter Rodriguez, chief of organizing and leadership at CASA. They were speaking September 6th at the We Are All DC rally in Washington, D.C. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Now, as I said at the top of the show, the Vienna Non-Governmental Organizing Committee held a webinar recently to discuss the UN Office on Drugs and Crime's World Drug Report 2025. Let's hear two of the speakers. First, here's Gisela Hansen of the NGO Dianova International speaking on the topic of From Data to Advocacy, Using the World Drug Report 2025 for Gender and Age-Sensitive Policies.
So let me begin with the concept of intersectionality, the lens through which Dianova international approaches to drug policy and practices, and a lot of different NGOs approach to drug policy from the intersectionality lens. If policy ignores these intersections that you can see in the screens and the multiple reality that it creates, they risk to leaving the same groups behind again and again. So the World Drug Report 2025 is more than statistics. It confirms that gender and age are critical intersecting factors. And for civil society, this evidence is a very powerful tool. Actually, it allows us to expose the inequalities and the structural barriers, and also to advocate with government for reforms of drug policy and health policies as well, and to strengthen professional training and raise awareness in our communities. So let me turn to gender, the gender dimension. Well, if we look at the World Drug Report, the data is very clear. One in four people who use drugs is a woman, but yet women are consistently underrepresented in treatment. Globally, only one in 18 women with drug use disorder receives the care that they need and the proper treatment services. Also, we would like to mention that when it comes to gender-based violence, the report refers mainly to intimate partner violence, but we think we must go further and use the broader term gender-based violence, because it captures the full range of violence that women face in relationship, within families, institutional violence, and in society at large. So focusing only on intimate partner violence, it will limit both the analysis and the policy responses. So women who use drugs experience up to six times more intimate partner violence than women in general population. This is a huge number that we need to take into account. And they are also more likely to have experienced multiple forms of violence across their lives. So this is the gender dimension we cannot ignore, and we must still be placed at the center of drug policies as a fundamental determinant of inequality and risk. So civil society can use the data from the report to send a clear message to policymakers. We need to tear down gender barriers. We have to address all forms of gender-based violence. And we need to implement trauma and gender-sensitive approaches if we wanted to have effective drug policies and treatment services. When people have been heavily victimized, trauma-sensitive care is an ethical imperative. We have to work from this lens. It is the only way to build real safe spaces and deliver treatment that are both effective and respectful, and above all, avoid the re-victimization that can happen in drug treatment services and harm reduction setting as well. Here you can see a picture of Frida Project in a therapeutic community of Dianova, Italy. They have implemented specific gender context and activities in a mixed therapeutic community in order to mainstream gender perspective, and they are having great results. At Dianova International, we know that advocacy must go hand in hand with awareness raising. So we invite you to consult our materials of our last year campaign on 25th November, where we aim to highlight the specific realities of women who use drugs and survive to gender-based violence. So now let us turn to age. The World Drug Report 2025 highlights very specific risks and needs across the life course. We have here a double focus. One on hand, the right of children and adolescents in drug policy, and on the other hand, the right of older people who are aging with addictions, and they're still largely invisible and overlooked. So this is dual lens is essential if we want age-oriented drug strategies. If we look at the report, data shows that adolescents age between 15 and 19 years old have higher rates of harm from drug use disorder than adults. And in some regions around the world, adolescents report drug use at rates equal or even higher than adults, particularly with stimulants. There are some inspiring practices when addressing addiction in very young people. And I want to share with you, for example, SPIM in India. They are supporting girls from the streets, very, very young girls who are dealing with different kind of violence in daily basis, and they are using drugs as a coping strategy. And other great experience, Special Dianova Chile, which has launched the Social Innovation Laboratory for Children's Rights in the Maule region under the Copulat 3 program. So we encourage you to visit these resources, that they are amazing. And related with the children whose parents use drugs, we totally do celebrate that World Drug Report 2025 recognized the stress, excess stations, and the lack of safe environment they face. But we think it does not fully capture the stigma, institutional discrimination, and shame that deeply affect them too and their families. And we need more data on this. On this topic, we want to stress the amazing work of our friends, Starling Communities in Canada. They have developed extraordinary peer-to-peer model where people with lived experience support each other and co-create materials. As you can see on the screen, please explore their website and resources. And of course, the work of Corina Giacomello and the Pompidou Group has been crucial in documenting the realities of children with parents who use drugs and the reforms needed to protect the rights and protect the families as well. So from this evidence, three advocacy lines are clear. We need child-centered care, prevention and treatment adapted to rights and development stages. And we need to ensure prevention and treatment is age-oriented and evidence-based. And we need to support children whose parents use drugs with compassion, without stigma, and ensuring family recovery. Finally, let us look at people who is aging with drug use, a population often left invisible. The report notes that more people are aging with drug use disorders, yet services that it's very rare to find services adapted to their needs. So older adults face comorbidities, polypharmacy, isolation, ageism, and trauma. So civil society, we as a civil society must advocate for making aging with addiction visible, for example, integrating older adults in data, policy, and national strategies, adapting treatment and have reduced to the reality of aging and health, and investing professionals and integrating care. So how can civil society can use the World Drug Report? With current data, we can expose gender and age gaps, systemic violence, and unequal access. Also, we can show how children, families, and older adults are affected, and we need to do more specific actions on these dimensions. With this evidence, we must talk to policymakers at the national, local level. We have to work with academia and professionals to improve training at universities and other settings and to co-create really meaningful research. And of course, working together as communities and NGOs to create innovative solutions. And in future WB and in future reports, World Drug Reports, we would love to see more reliable data on some specific groups like women involved in sex work, LGBTIQ plus community, and some others that remain still invisible. More strong evidence on children of parents whose parents use drugs, including stigma, institutional discrimination, and other related situations, and more systemic data on other adults and their outcomes. So this way, global evidence becomes local advocacy and better policies.
That was Gisela Hansen of the NGO Dianova International speaking on the topic of From Data to Advocacy, Using the World Drug Report 2025 for Gender and Age-Sensitive Policies, as part of a webinar hosted by the Vienna Non-Governmental Organizing Committee to look at the UN Office on Drugs and Crime's World Drug Report 2025. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Let's hear from another speaker on that webinar. Ernesto Cortez is Executive Director of the Costa Rican Association on Drug Studies and Interventions, a member of the Costa Rican Association of Families of Incarcerated People, a member of the Secretariat of the Latin American Network of People Who Use Drugs, and a board member of the International Network of People Who Use Drugs. He speaks on the topic of leveraging data from the World Drug Report to strengthen civil society submissions to UN human rights treaty bodies.
I could say, you know, that even though I've studied anthropology, I have a master's degree in criminology and master's degree and another master's degree in mental health. I worked several years in prevention and treatment institutions. I could say that most of what I've learned on my education comes from my lived experience of being an activist, a drug user activist. So being part of the drug user community has given me a deeper understanding on how to address our needs, and especially in Latin America, a region that it's the heart of the war on drugs, and there's minimal or even non-harm reduction funding for the region. So I will, I'm very grateful with you and ODC, with the Vienna NGO committee, especially Sarah and Matej, for opening the space, this civil society. And it's an honor for me to speak on how we have used the World Drug Report, how we use several World Drug Reports and this year drug reports to support our work on human rights and international reviews. So before I start, I just want to say the ASAID, my organization, the Costa Rican Association on Drug Studies and Interventions, is a civil organization founded almost 10 years ago or more than 10 years ago. Our mission is to promote drug policies grounded on human rights and public health and community participation. And I also work at LAMPUT, the Latin American Network of People Who Use Drugs. We're more than 200 members in 19 different countries in the region. We look to advocate to amplify the demands and voices of people who use drugs. And our vision is that we can live with dignity and quality as any other citizen. So starting with this position, you know, as an activist, as a person with lived experience, I could say that the World Drug Report matters to us in several reasons, especially in two reasons. One of the reasons is the access to validated and confirmed data. I will round that in more a little bit. And also for human rights advocacy at international level, that is the main reason we have used this reports and several other reports. Definitely, our perspective is how to strengthen our arguments when we challenge stigma, when we challenge discrimination and human rights violations to our community of people who use drugs. So the first one, it's access to validated and confirmed data. No, this is mainly because many countries in Latin America do not collect or share public information on drug use, health consequences, or human rights towards people who use drugs. Many countries don't have national statistics or are outdated or politically manipulated. No, many countries haven't done a national survey on drugs use for more than 10 years. Or even though they have done it, it's not easy to access to this information. And that's why the World Drug Report provides possibilities and information to be accessed from these surveys. So this is also information that we can use to compare between countries and regions to help us illustrate disparities between Latin American and around the world. And also in times when governments might claim that the situation is unique, or the drug use or traffic, it is not a priority issue in the country. Using World Drug Report may help us to contrast this context with neighboring countries or global average, or also to understand a wider pattern. You know? For example, many countries that we have done research with LAMPUT, mainly community-led research, we have used World Drug Report data, so give us more legitimacy to our findings. The other point I wanted to address is the human rights advocacy, and this is the main point of my presentation, because we have managed to understand how the international human rights system works. We have systematically reviewed, or followed what some UN human rights bodies like the Human Rights Council or the Committee on Elimination of Discrimination Against Women, or mainly the Committee on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights. No, they all these UN bodies do periodically review for countries, so civil society can present reports or submissions, or also called shadow reports, to these processes. So we have used this the World Drug Report in many of these submissions. In fact, we have presented submissions to Guatemala, El Salvador, Brazil, Honduras, Chile at the Committee on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights. We have also presented some information on the special rapporteur on the right to health that visited many countries in Latin America during the 2023. regarding her report on the right to health and drug policy, mainly through healthcare services. And most of this information comes now mainly because of the use of stimulants that I want to address here. Now, drug use or drug use patterns in Latin America are different from the rest of the world. Injecting drug use, opioid drug use, is not a common practice in Latin America. We do see it in several countries, especially Mexico and Colombia, or big cities around the region. But we do have a different pattern of drug use and definitely different pattern of drug harms that should be addressed from this perspective. So thinking in this way, the submissions we have done to this Committee on Economic and Social Cultural Rights, the CESC committee from now on, it's relevant that they have come with recommendations after this. The recommendation comes from the committee to the governments that point out that punitive approaches or that the war on drugs limits access to healthcare services and undermines the availability of human reduction and evidence-based treatments. So it definitely shows that these recommendations and the World Drug Report findings underscores the importance of governments shifting their punitive or criminalization frameworks toward more human rights or a public health-oriented approaches. So just to close by, I wanted to say that we definitely think of the World Drug Report more than just a report, more than just epidemiological data. It is definitely a tool for advocacy, a tool for change. You know, it helped us to show the community evidence and lived experience with the data or epidemiological data that supports it. You know. But it definitely needs to have some, we would like to have some recommendations on how to improve it. No, specifically disaggregated data, as Gisela said in the presentation before, we need data disaggregated by gender, by age, by sex, socioeconomic status. But for us as drug users, it's also important to see this intersectionality, this diversity around women who use drugs or trans people or gay men. No, also homeless people, indigenous, Afro-descendants in general, or mainly seeing also the migration problems, it is also important to have information on migrated population. Now, also how to integrate human rights analysis, how to present data on health and markets connected to human rights obligations, including trends such as health, liberty, and non-discrimination, or non-arbitrary detentions. It would be really important for our world, and also human rights indicators. You know, it's really important to know how coverage of basic programs or needs, like syringe programs, opioid agonist therapy, naloxone, or even how we can respond to stimulant drug use, that we still need some more human rights approaches.
That was Ernesto Cortez, Executive Director of the Costa Rican Association on Drug Studies and Interventions and a board member of the International Network of People Who Use Drugs, speaking on the topic of leveraging data from the World Drug Report to strengthen civil society submissions to UN human rights treaty bodies, as part of a webinar hosted by the Vienna Non-Governmental Organizing Committee to look at the UN Office on Drugs and Crime's World Drug Report 2025. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.